Here we go. Here we go. Thank you for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. First and foremost, happy Halloween to you, dear listener, whenever it is that this episode finds you. I'm just celebrating. We're recording this in September, so we're at least kind of close to the real thing, or closer than we usually are, I feel. I'm Cody Narveson, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
I'm Harry Mack, and happy Halloween, I guess. And you can find me on Twitter at Shiitake Harry.
And I'm Emily Suey. You can find me on Instagram at Emily Suey.
Not with us today is Jason Daphnis, the hash-slinging slasher himself, but you can find him on Twitter at Nintendoofus. You can also keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at StoopKidsPod. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the age of wisdom. It was the age of foolishness. It was the epic of belief. It was the epic of incredulity. It was the season of light. It was the season of darkness. It was the spring of hope. It was the winter of despair. Kids is spelled with a Z. Also with us today is a very special guest. He's a returning guest making his season 4 debut. His episodes are almost as long as he is tall. Please welcome back to the show, Dan Nagin. Dan, how's it hanging?
It's going fantastic. I can't wait to be talking about these episodes. I'm back. You can't keep me away from a spooky episode of Hey Arnold.
Yeah, we gotta make sure you don't get typecast. Nobody puts Dan into a podcast corner. Okay, hey, fair.
No, absolutely put me into this box. I'll take it.
All right. Well, we're gonna quote you on that. So beware. Ooh, Halloween. Well, it's great having you here, Dan. We are here today to talk about episode 66 of Hey Arnold. For those of you keeping track at home, that is season 4, episode 6, going by production code order. We're gonna start, as we always do, with episode A, which is called the Headless Cabbie, in the way that Arnold says it, but it's just Headless Cabbie. Original air date October 30th, 1999. The Wikipedia sanctioned episode summary is as follows. Arnold tells an urban legend about a decapitated taxi driver. The gang goes out into the world only to find that the details in the story are becoming real. Spooky things happen. That's my addition to that synopsis. And as we always do, shouting out the fine folks who made this episode possible. Christine Kolosov directed this one, and the writer for this one was Joseph the Purdman Purdy, continuing his season 4 tear. Actually, both he and Christine Kolosov, the two of them, I feel like, are on a bit of a tear. So shout outs to the both of them. Let's, Harry, let's kick it over to you first. What did you think of this episode?
Hey, thanks, Cody. Yeah, this is a classic. Every year growing up, Charlie and Dad and I would watch first Arnold's Halloween and then this episode without fail. I feel like it is the sort of follow-up to Hey Arnold's already amazing run of spooky episodes. Dan, you brought this up at first, but like between the Haunted Train and then Arnold's Halloween, and then even the roller coaster episode, Dan, it's kind of funny to think about that because it's like that is not an explicitly spooky episode, but we snuck in a little spookiness there at the end.
It's very terrifying, especially if you really draw that comparison to the movie Clifford in there.
Right, exactly. But yeah, no, I love this episode. I think it's a classic. It occurred to me while watching it this time that it really speaks to the richness of Hey Arnold that I find myself missing episode templates without even realizing it, right? Like the second that I realized we were going to be watching like a Boys Night episode that was just about this group sort of like stirring each other's imaginations and going overboard again, as we've seen in some previous episodes, I got really excited. And it's like all of Hey Arnold could be that kind of episodes, right? Like I think that these characters are strong enough to be their own show. And it's like, what a testament to Hey Arnold that that can be true. And also, this is not even like my favorite template of episodes, right? We also have Helga, and we also have all of the girls on the show, and we also have Arnold and Helga's interactions, and a billion other subplots. But yeah, this one's really effective from a spooky Halloween point of view. I really love in Hey Arnold the way that urban legend episodes like this one, which Gerald actually explicitly calls it out as an urban legend, which I really appreciated. They're really all about the power of children's imaginations more than anything, right? Like the ability that your group has to kind of mythologize your own adventures and hanging out and city, and how that imbues them with sort of an extra special quality, right? Like it created this unforgettable sleepover experience for Arnold and all of his friends. In terms of the character arc, I also really love that I remember Grandpa telling the Headless Cabbie story, or at least coming into the room with, you know, milk and cookies as he's wont to do, and talking about how, oh no, actually that is a true story. I didn't make that one up, guys, really. But that doesn't happen. Instead, Arnold kind of assumes the role of Grandpa. Right? We're in sort of like perpetrating this idea and to sort of like creep out his friends. And I really love that. I really love that our boy's learning from the best. So I love all of the character appearances in this. I'm a huge fan of the man with a giant gold hook for an arm. That, as Dan, you noted, the very, very funny part about that is he has no bearing whatsoever on the story of the Headless Cabbie. He's just an extra little detail thrown in there. Makes for maybe my favorite punchline in the episode, though there are a lot. And it's really funny. It's spooky. It's cozy. I always am really reminded of fall when I watch this episode in a really nice way. It's a great vibe from the sleepover to the spooky Central Park-esque woods, to the ice cream, to the storytelling. I just really love even the lighting in this episode, the shadows, the way that it takes place completely at night. We don't usually see such a night-based episode. It's a really fun episode and a really classic one, and I'm super glad we got to it, because it's one of the, I guess, many episodes, admittedly, but that I have always returned to and that I've always really strongly associated with this series.
For sure. And the timing couldn't have been more perfect, not because of Halloween, because of the introduction to autumn, because summer is over and it's never coming back. Womp womp. We'll cry about that later. For now, though, Emily, I'd love to hear what you thought. How did you feel about the Headless Caddyshack.
Yeah.
Yeah. How'd you feel, Emily? How do you feel about Caddyshack? And then this episode, if you don't mind.
I don't feel great about golf, so not a fan mood of Caddyshack. But Headless Cabbie, I remember this one as a kid because the level of terrifyingness that Arnold brings to the story is so strong. It's like such, especially the way they show it in the episode, the way they animate all the twisty turny like park path, and it's nighttime in the city park, and all purpley and blue, and you're like, ooh, it really get the creeps when they show his story being told. So I definitely remembered being scared about this episode, and still it does kind of give out the creepy crawlies a little bit. So great. Yeah. Halloween story. Happy Halloween, everybody. I think I do have some issues with it though, so I can talk about that. But I like that in general, it's dealing with paranoia, and especially Harold is like the vehicle which they use, who has the most paranoia here, the most fear. And I think his fears are totally reasonable, especially based on the fact that they just heard this story from Arnold, and it's like point for point coming true in real time while they're on a fella's nighttime ice cream adventure walk. So I felt a little bad for Harold because I thought he was getting treated not super great, especially with Arnold just being like, oh, come on, Harold, everything's great. It's all rainbows. I'm Arnold. You're like, okay, man, you just told this story and it's all coming true for the poor guy, and he's freaked out. So I don't know. Shout out to Harold there. I think he's reasonable in this one. I also really liked the fact that they're going on a nighttime ice cream adventure. Like, that was all Stinky's plan. some really funny lines from the fellas in this one when they're at Arnold's or in Arnold's room and he's doing all, they're taking turns doing stories. So yeah, Stinky said, "A yarn like that sure gives me an appetite. Let's go and get some ice cream, fellas." Just also made me think of y'all, because it's something I feel like Harry and Cody, you guys especially, you might say something like that in real life. But apart from all of that, I like the Scotty dog. He's got the Peter Gallagher eyebrows and the like bright red flannel scarf around him. And the hook arm guy that's actually just a watch, a guy covered in watches. Wow, I cannot talk. It is hard to be a podcaster right after Labor Day. But one thing I was realizing I have an issue with was that the only woman in the entire episode is the evil wench who gets more and more evil in the story until you see her with like sharp fangs and her hair is going crazy. And she's what causes the poor man who's the cabbie to become headless, and it's all her fault. And then she gets in the cabbie again at the end to kind of give you more of the heebie-jeebies and keep that like urban legend going. But she's the only woman in the whole episode. So it's like, okay, that kind of sucks. But whatever, it's a fellas getting ice cream adventure episode, and it's Halloween, and I think that the boys also should have gotten double scoops or two ice cream cones by the end of it, because they had been through a lot in this episode. But yeah, I'd like to hear what Dan thinks and you think, Cody.
Yeah, I also want to hear what Dan has to say. That's I got to recognize, though, Emily, that's a really great point about the only woman in this episode being characterized in that way, which in a vacuum, like, it feels weird. And it feels even weirder given the fact that we talked about Jamie Owen Love a couple weeks ago, where like the motivations of girls and women in this recent string of season four episodes, an unfortunate trend that we, I guess, have to pay attention to now, because it feels a little weird and gross. But one person who is a very ostensibly not weird and gross, Dan Nagin. Dan, prove me correct by not saying weird and gross things. What did you think about this episode?
That was what a lead in. I've never been introduced quite like that. So thank you so much, Cody. To start off, I'm going to give my opinion on Caddyshack as well. Also not a fan. Don't care for Chevy Chase. Mm-hmm, and it's real Chase heavy. So I agree with Emily on that one. But I am overall a fan of this episode, despite the problematic issue of really the only woman in it being just a soulless ghoul, which hadn't really. I really latch onto the boys' night aspect of it, but yeah, that's a really really strong point, Emily. And I imagine in context to the rest of season four, like you said so far, might be a trend. I don't know. I'm not really aware of what else you've already gone through with this season, but I love this episode. I didn't realize it was a Halloween episode. I like legitimately came out for Halloween, because I would watch this episode all the time, because I love spooks and scares, and this is like the one out of the urban legends that is like the one that actually kind of scared me as a kid, kind of like what Emily mentioned having with this. Where just the effectiveness of Arnold's telling of the story, the casting of the light as he makes himself look like the headless cabbie himself is great. I always think of Monkey Cat as just the lamest possible scary story. Like, if you ever sit around telling stories with your friends, there's always one friend that just they can't do it. And they come up with just something like really half baked, like Monkey Cat. And I love the detail. I love that they give airtime to that, because this is a really quick moving episode, and they spend like almost a minute just dedicated to a really lackluster story from Stinky. But vibes are great. I love that they're just like whisked away to like old timey London almost in the park. This is like my ideal kind of evening, just walking around, crisp autumn air, a bit of a mist in the air. It's probably a little bit wet and crisp outside. J- just cold enough to wear a jacket over your PJs, like stinky. It's just fantastic vibes all the way. So
for, yeah.
Overall, great episode, despite the turn of the ghoul. Like, I forgot that at the end, it's not a woman in the cabbie in the cab with Ernie, that it ends up just being Mr. Wynn.
He's got a creepy laugh. I don't know what to tell you. He'll say this. He'll tell you the same thing. He's got a creepy laugh.
Yeah, I love how upfront he is on that. It's just, he owns it.
Yeah, he owns it, so nobody can come back to him and be like, "Hey, Mr. Wynn, you have a creepy laugh." And you know what? Got to salute him for it. Yeah. I mean, overall, I like this episode. It's about the fellas sleepover vibes. It's this show trying to do like another Halloween-esque episode. And yeah, it is another entry in the season four. Well, another entry in the season, longstanding season four, a trend of like iffily written women characters, but also characters getting really into like making friends with stray random animals. And next episode as well. So a lot of fascinating data points here, but did feel a little too one-sided at times. The whole like Harold is the only one who is concerned about the story, and you know everybody else like I eventually buys in, but isn't it funny that Harold the bully is really scared of this story? There's just like maybe a bit too much of that for my liking, but you know overall, Dan got into the sort of the analytics of this episode's structure, and it is kind of funny that you know roughly 10% of this episode is Stinky telling a garbage story. And then, you know, Arnold spends roughly half the episode telling a pretty great story. Like he tells it well, it's animated really well, it's built up really well. And we get about, you know, half the episode of us in Arnold's bedroom and in their sort of shared fantasy of this story getting told. And then the latter half of it being, I guess in my head, being somebody a bit removed from like fellas sleepovers, I sort of thought of it as like when you go see a scary movie or like a really sad movie in a theater and you come out of the theater and you're still like kind of on edge a little bit, like the various things inside of you are still kind of immersed in that world and you're just kind of like looking around, you know, is Michael Myers not the scary masked villain, not Shrek himself, but like is he waiting around the corner waiting to spook me? I guess in either case that would be pretty scary. But I think mapping that onto, you know, as it's been gestured at, the sort of you're at a sleepover, it's late at night, and you also got a sugar craving, it's a perfect storm for things to escalate. And I thought, you know, that went really well with the goofy coincidences that were peppered throughout the story. It's this writing is really, really silly. This episode is a great medium for that silly writing of, you know, well, what are some goofy coincidences we can like squeeze in here to make this work? Oh, Eugene is clogging his way through the park, and Ernie has a cloak on that's too big for him because he's a shorter man, and Mr. Wynn has a creepy laugh and he wears it right on his sleeve pretty proudly. All that stuff landed pretty well. I think of like silly animated show writing, like, you know, Treehouse of Horror, where they kind of go, you know, to the we can bleep that even though that's technically not a cuss. I don't like that expression, but that's kind of what it was. They're just like, hey, we're gonna really go for it and make this as silly as possible. And in pockets, this episode is very silly, and I really appreciated that.
I think that's what I like the most, because it really takes kind of what Harry mentioned of like the power of a child's imagination and that overactive imagination of, and I mean, it's not even limited to just children, but I feel like it's really prone with a child where they read too much into something. They see something from earlier, like a scary story, in everything that they look at. And it's taking the cartoon elements of this show to really just heighten that to the nth degree, where it's just like every single beat of the story they recreate, but then they explain it away in like the silliest way possible. Like nothing tops the fact that they think they hear horse hooves on the cobblestones and it's Eugene clogging. Like that's absolutely insane. That's so ludicrous, but it's fantastic. And that's the exact kind of thing that you would have happen as a kid, of just being super afraid of something and seeing scares in everything you're looking at, and just overreacting to the smallest thing that ultimately is nothing. Like that, I think everyone can relate to that sort of moment, right, Harry?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was going to say that's even a prevailing sort of trope of urban legend episodes in general, right? Is this idea that a big part of the power of the urban legend is actually the power of the city and the sort of mythology that it exerts over the kids, and this sort of like very sort of like willingness to let that power overtake you, especially in the case of people like Gerald and Arnold. It's like this willingness to make for special things. I really love the contrast that we see here, as we often do in urban legends, where it starts with something that is very mysterious and also very alien, where the park doesn't feel like it's a park in their city anymore, right? It feels like you had said sort of like old world, old Europe or something. And then the starkness of the contrast when they actually go out into the park, and it's like, oh yeah, the mysterious sound is our boy Eugene clogging in the early, what did Gerald say, he's like clogging on the cobblestones in the early evening. Now I've seen everything, it's amazing. The guy with the golden hook for an arm is just some guy selling quality watches. And even like the cabbie himself and the woman screaming are just Mr. Wynn and Oscar. I just love this idea that like the things that you think are so scary and so foreign to you are actually a part of the world that you know and love, right? Like, I kind of like that messaging. This is also, in terms of data points, like you had said, Cody, it's another interesting one that, like, this is an episode along with episode B of this series that is sort of about punishing people for their, like, not skepticism necessarily, but like, their sort of affected toughness, right? Like the reason why Harold is it gets it so hard in this episode is because he's the guy at the beginning of the episode who's like, I'm not scared, I'm hungry and I'm bored and I want to have a better time at this party, right? And so he is kind of the episode stinker. But I agree with all of you, it is brutal that like he keeps taking it in this episode. I don't know that we necessarily needed that, especially because like we all love Harold now, you know. It's one of those rare circumstances where it's like the trope of who Harold is almost working against the fact that we know Harold as well as we do now. And it's like, even though we understand that, like, within the context of this episode, he's the guy that kind of has to be punished for producing this sort of affected skepticism and pretending like he's too cool to be scared. But it's like, okay, but we all knew Harold wasn't really like that anyway. So, but yeah, I think you're right, Emily. I guess I didn't notice that the headless cabbie was, because to me, she was just more of like a movie monster than like a female character in the first place, right? Like she only existed in sort of Arnold's imagination, but that is not an excuse. I would have loved to have seen another female character in this episode, it, not only to sort of offset that problematic idea, but also just because I think it would have made for a stronger episode, right? Like even if it had been Grandma in the back of the cart or something, which frankly would have made more sense. Though I think that the Mr. Wynn joke is weirdly funny for how absurd it is. So I'm going back and forth. But yeah, I like this episode a lot. It's a strange data point, I guess, to go back to Cody's terminology again, in that it feels very much like the rest of the later seasons, that it's like a post Hey Arnold episode in some ways, right? Where it's just like we're so familiar with what these episodes are shaped like, that doing an urban legend episode feels like a send up to urban legend episodes or something, right? And I gotta kind of love it for that too, I guess.
Yeah, that's extremely fair. I think the little holdup I have, and even suspending disbelief with regards to an animated show, but like even the fantastical logic of the story that's being told, like I can get 100% behind a red herring non sequitur guy with a hook for an arm who does it. Like that's a great gag, the fact that he doesn't come back. I have trouble wrapping my head around the logic of like this woman is trying to get her dog, and it eventually becomes like her really wanting to see this guy get decapitated And like by the end of it, like she doesn't end up with her dog. Like her dog is still out there. Like I don't. Hey, maybe I'm the weird one, but I would want to get my dog way more than I would want to decapitate someone. Granted, I'm not a ghoulish like caricature character. But yeah, I think that on it was just this weird combination of things where I was like, I don't know. I probably got on board with this when I was a kid because the images are very evocative and affecting and like gimmicky Halloween stuff is not like gimmicky, but just like very distinctly, this is clearly a seasonal Halloween thing that they're going for. And I can get on board with that. I can tell what they're trying to do even from a young age. And so I don't know, some of that was probably glossed over, but yeah, I don't know. I guess that's what I'm kind of sitting with. Liked, but oh yeah, go ahead, Harry. Didn't love was my final note.
I was just going to say, that's so funny. I never even thought about like, what is the headless cabbie getting out of all this? Or I'm sorry, the woman who's going through the park. It's like she and her Scotty dog are just like the sort of bait and switch that lures cab drivers to their deaths. And it's like, for what purpose, lady? Like you're ripping these guys' heads off. And for what, you know, you don't even get your dog back at the end. That's
for
very
mayhem.
Funny.
You don't know. She may find the dog. She may walk away from the carriage scene and the dog comes running up to her and it's like, let's go do it again.
But we don't see it. We don't see it at the end of the story. And we don't see it at the end of like in real life, the dog runs away again. So that parallel also doesn't work. That dog is still just running around Hillwood somewhere. Just running around Hillwood. Running around Hillwood, Dan.
I mean, that's just how these kind of stories always end, where it's like, what did the person want? Who knows? They didn't want anything. It's just, this is like a weird mishmash of like several different scary stories or urban legends into one, like the man with a hook. Everyone's heard like 100 different stories about that. And I do love the fact that it is a complete red herring that means nothing to the story. The terrier means nothing to the story. There's so many different misdirects in it where like really even in Arnold's story, like the woman that gets into the cab in his actual story that he tells, she doesn't like undergo a transformation. That's just in the animation, at least from what I remember of his story. But it's like this, it doesn't ultimately go anywhere. It's just meant to evoke some sort of discomfort and terror from you. Like it, no scary stories or urban legends that kids tell in their bedroom to scare other people have kind of a point to them.
I don't know. I thought Monkey Cat was pretty trenchant.
Yeah, I mean, it really did dig into the horrors of modern science and where are the limits that should be drawn and what medical science is allowed to do. So I agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, thankfully, it's already been brought up what truly the scariest part of the story was, and that was the set of Peter Gallagher-esque eyebrows that are on that dog. Extremely good call, Emily. I will use this opportunity to open up the floor to anybody who has any, you know, lingering thoughts about this episode, any shout outs that you would like to be administered before we move along from the cabbie who is headless.
I only have one final shout out, and it's one that's sort of overlooked by the logic of the episode, but boy, it's so cute that Oscar and Mr. Wynn just go on like dates in the park, I guess. They're just like, he's just driving this cab around in the park, and Mr. Wynn is just sitting in a cloak behind him and laughing his butt off, huh? I love it. Look at those two bros just broing down in their, you know, their nighttime creepy cab rides.
Yeah, Ernie and Mr. Wynn.
I called him Oscar like three times. Wow, I'm off my game after missing the last episode. Thank you for the correction. That is Ernie, not Oscar. Very different episode if it had been Oscar.
I would like to throw shade to the gaslights that were mentioned in the story. Those gaslights have never seen a flame, though they claim to be lit. And then also I'd like to shout out Wally, the stuffed alligator that Harold clings to for comfort. We've seen the Wally, the alligator, in the Timberley episode Ransom. So it kind of makes a reappearance here. Shout outs there.
Wally is really good. I'm glad that you called attention to him. I had to say, shout out to my boy Stinky. Not only does he tell a banger of a story, he also knows exactly what's what, where he doesn't bother getting out of his pajamas once he put them on. He just threw a coat on over that. Just great behavior. That's when you know that you're done for the day. You don't get dressed again.
Oh, speaking of shout outs to Sleepy King Sid as well, who clearly wanted to go to bed at 6:30 PM. You know, some days are like that, Sid. As Emily noted, it's the day after Labor Day, and I understand you, my man.
Exactly. It's the day after Labor Day. Things are cooling down a little bit. Actually, so much so that I feel like I may want to go put on a scarf or something. So I'm going to do that. Y'all sit tight. Do not touch that dial because we'll be right back after the break. Welcome back to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. We've got episode 66B up next here, and that episode is called Friday the 13th. Original air date October 30th, 1999. The Wikipedia-sanctioned episode summary is as follows. Arnold and Gerald try to prove superstitions are fictitious, only for it all to backfire on them. And once again, shouting out the fine folks who made this episode possible, Christine Kolosov actually directed this episode as well, and Antoinette Stella wrote it. So shout-outs to those two. And Emily, let's kick it to you first this time. What did you think about Friday the 13th?
Well, thanks for asking, Cody. I do have my Halloween-themed Oreos out for this special episode. They're the ones with the orange filling and the, Halloween decorative sides. But yeah, Friday the 13th, the episode. I like this episode. I really miss Grandma and Grandpa, so just seeing them right off the bat, I was like, oh my gosh, where have they been? I've missed them. We saw a little bit of them, I guess, in the Oscar Can't Read episode, but this is us seeing them more as a couple and kind of doing back and forth in the kitchen and bickering and just being great. So I love that. I love Grandma's whole spiel about rounding up 13 black cats on Friday the 13th. While in a cat costume, of course. And I really love Madame Blanche's reappearance, Kathy Najimy. I just love her so much. I don't even know why. Maybe she's like a familial queer aunt type figure to me or something. But I really like her, and she's a great character in as Madame Blanche in that Love Potion store. She was before in Helga's Love Potion, of course, as same character. And yeah, this one too. This one is more dealing apart from like, or not apart. In Headless Cabbie, we were dealing a bit more with paranoia and that kind of fear. And in this episode, I'd say we're dealing more with just superstitions across the board. Obviously, especially dealing with 13 and Friday the 13th. And I looked it up, and there's a word for the fear or avoidance of the number 13. I wonder if y'all know what it is. It's called triskaidekaphobia. Triskaidekaphobia. Really long word, but yeah, because you know how hotels and some buildings will skip 13 floors or the 13th floor completely out of superstition or whatever. Yeah, there's a word for that phobia. So that episode is all about this. I really like the exaggerated features of it, like the swarm of bees that follows them around is like super outrageous, and the show, I think in these episodes, maybe especially because they're Halloween themed, gets like more into the fantastical side of things instead of like just being more realistic. It's like, yeah, this giant swarm of bees wouldn't happen, but it can happen here in a cartoon Halloween episode. And for some reason in my notes I wrote bad luck, religion, and internal damnation, as if I was on my way to write a dissertation or something about this episode. Not going to do that. We could skip right over that. But yes, there's something to religion and superstition and damnation and all of that. But one other thing I'll say is I like that Arnold and Gerald here actually get even with the fifth grade bullies instead of doing like the morally righteous slant and, you know, one-upping them or being better morally. They're like, no, this guy, what's his face? Edmund and, oh my God, I'm blanking on this bully. Wolfgang and Edmund. They've been following him around all day, messing with their Friday the 13th day. And just getting all up in their business as they even put garlic chains around their necks and get the thing from Madame Blanche. They're just messing with them all day. So instead, at the end of them just being like, well, we're better or whatever because we have moral standing, they're like, now we kind of just get even with you, fifth grade bullies. Like, we've had enough. Arnold says, this is the worst day I've ever had in my life. So that feels nice and kind of warranted and a little different than this show would usually do with this type of plot. And yeah, garlic chains around our necks, save us from this evil hex. Hell yeah. I'll kick it back to you, though.
Yeah, and hey, even if you don't write that dissertation, Emily, I feel like Bad Luck, Religion, and Damnation, the story of Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast, is in the running for the title of our memoirs when those eventually come out. So you may as well get that started sooner rather than later. More on that later, perhaps. Maybe we'll see. Harry, what did you think about this episode?
Hey, thank you. I really, really loved what Emily just characterized, because ever since I saw that this was an Antoinette Stella joint, I've been paying a lot of attention to her writing because of all of the discussion that we had about her with Craig Bartlett. And I almost wonder if, like, you can tell that she cares so much about the episode she writes, right? Like we had talked about. And that was what really stuck out to me about this episode, was what Emily had said about Arnold, right? Like, I think that it's true that Wolfgang and Edmund get their comeuppance in this episode, but I really like that Arnold is kind of legitimately humbled too, right? Like, he starts this episode as this very sort of braggadocious sort of like skeptic or rationalist who's like, bad luck does not exist. I'm going to prove it to everybody. I'm going to drag my best friend Gerald along with me in my quest to prove my crusade to prove bad luck doesn't exist, which, by the way, Gerald, a huge real one for going along with this, even though it clearly makes him very uncomfortable. Maybe a little bit iffy on Arnold's part to force his buddy Gerald into it this way. But I really love that Arnold, he has a very human moment in this episode where he's finally like, you know, trying to, whether or not bad luck exists, trying to prove it this way and making our whole day about this has really ruined a lot of things for us, right? Like, we are covered in fish heads, we're covered in bee attracting nectar of some kind, we're covered in paint, which they got off remarkably well in the school bathroom. And I really love that, like, Arnold has this moment where he's like, you know, I actually have learned something here, and it's that maybe it's not up to me to sort of, like, you know, like, prove everybody else wrong, or to prove that like, rationalism must prevail, or that you have nothing to be worried about, right? It's a very Arnold appropriate episode, right? Because he does it with good intentions, right? He doesn't want his friends to be anxious about Friday the 13th, but he goes really far to sort of, like, make himself the hero to do that, as, you know, we know Arnold is wont to do. And so I really like that Antoinette Stella, maybe playing with the Arnold mythos a little bit, comes back and is like, you know, you're actually sort of not going to be able to do that, Arnold. And I especially like it because, like, as the episode itself even points out, this is sort of like Arnold's Don Quixotean quest against bad luck has been a prevailing motif in the series, right? Like, they even shout out Eugene being born on Friday the 13th, and Arnold just, he can't stand the idea of good luck and bad luck, maybe because he just can't stand that everybody doesn't get what they deserve all the time, right? And I really like episodes like this that kind of push against that. This is also, like, by far, I think, maybe that's not true, I feel like we rarely see Wolfgang and Edmund so much. And I really love Arnold and Wolfgang's interactions, not only because they're voiced by the same guy and it's super fun to hear those back and forths, but also because I love how exaggerated Wolfgang is as a character. I love that he's a year older than Arnold and the crew, but he looks like he's like a 35-year-old linebacker or something, right? Like, they literally draw him with, like, bags under his eyes in some scenes of this, and it's just like, this dude is just impossibly huge and old. So yeah, I think I really like this episode too. I think that it's a really interesting episode to slot into later season Hey Arnold to sort of like start to understand how they are thinking about and trying to sort of work inside of the established storytelling that they've been doing to find new ideas and even to sort of push back at old established ideas, right?
There's the mute button. Right you are, Harry. And yeah, I turned to Dan, who I think, honestly, if given the option between Wolfgang, a 35-year-old linebacker, and Dan Nagin, as he is in real life, I think Dan might be able to take Wolfgang in a fight. Putting that out there. Dan, your thoughts on that and or the episode?
That's incredibly high praise. Thank you so much for giving me the vote of confidence that I could take on and beat up a fifth grader. So that's...
I believe in you, man.
Thank you so much. Great episode. Great companion piece to part A, in that, like, both of these episodes, I think Emily kind of hit on it. They're kind of dealing with similar ideas, almost, where it's kind of like overthinking, like, what is happening around you, overthinking coincidences that don't really mean anything. Or, I mean, in this instance, like, someone's just messing with them. They're making them think that all of these supposed bad luck things are because they went and broke all of those superstitions. It's the kind of thing that is a real childish mindset. And I like this episode so much because Arnold behaves like not like a righteous, moralistic person. He just behaves like a kid would, which is refreshing. Like what Emily said, him getting revenge at the end and like turning things around on, I think unjustly Wolfgang takes too much of it. I think Edmund should be up there as well with the fish heads. Like, don't put this all on Wolfgang. His crony was part of this as well. And I think, Cody, you mentioned it. There was a weird connecting thread between this and the last episode of having like the big tough character being like undercut, and like both of them have a tough guy character screaming for their mommy, which is interesting. I don't see Wolfgang episodes that often, so I don't know if he often has that kind of undercutting of his masculinity like that as kind of a joke, but it was interesting to see that happen in both of the episodes, even though with Harold it's kind of a running gag of him doing that. But overall, a super fun episode. I love watching the sequence of events. I don't remember what the word is. Montage of them breaking every single superstition in the book, which is a ton of fun. And I don't know if any of you were superstitious little kids. I imagine Harry was. As a little anxious child, I can see you.
You know I was,
cracks.
Man. Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's that rang true. Like, I know I would, I still avoid stepping on cracks. Just, it's like burned into my very being. And final thing, I'm with Emily. Like, I loved seeing Madame Blanche in this episode. Like, as soon as it showed her shop, I was like, oh, this is great. This is great. Get this. Grifter into the episode. I love it.
Yeah, I really love that, like, we've now officially entered the era of like fan cameos, right? Like the Eugene introduction in the last part, or even Ernie and Mr. Wynn, and now Madame Blanche. It's like those moments are set up to like get cheers from the audience, right? And I did.
I think as well, there's a woman that they pass by on the street who I swear is the same animation of a woman from the episode where they're stuck on the train, on the subway.
No
like,
way.
I swear they reused that animation. And I'm pretty sure in the school, when they are stepping on the broken, on the mirror, you see Lorenzo in the background. Pretty, wow. I'm like
only
positive.
Lorenzo?
Yes.
He was just like unaccompanied Lorenzo?
Yeah,
like
no, we didn't see Lorenzo's mom. There? I don't think his mom
Dang
made
it.
An appearance. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, I don't know if I think more so than believing in like superstitions and bad luck when I was a kid, I definitely believed in like, you know, boosting my floor. It's just like I had a lucky rabbit's foot. I was glad that got some representation this episode. It was nice to, you know, see them pull out all the good and bad luck sort of tropes, and lucky rabbit's feet included. Mine was orange. Can't remember why, but shout outs to that lucky rabbit's foot I had. I don't know. The wheels are already coming off. No, I like this episode. And Dan, ultimately, like you calling back to that one particular point from episode A, I think like y'all characterized, this episode and sort of my feelings about this episode really well. The last, I guess, I mean, the only other remaining thing that I had as a sort of, this is the thing that I took from this episode is like, this feels like a weird episode to shoehorn Wolfgang into. Like, that was my first reaction. Like, it's, and it might just be because we haven't seen Wolfgang in a while. As it's been said, like, it's good to see him again and to see Edmund again. And to sort of see their back and forth and how Wolfgang is a foil in so many ways to Arnold, an episode about superstitions where like this sort of confrontation between Arnold and Wolfgang prompts this like school-wide standoff. That's a bizarre premise. And on one hand, I was like, it's again, like it feels, you know, I'm getting my first sort of couple bites of this episode's meal. And I'm like, oh, this has an interesting taste to it. Like I wouldn't have expected Wolfgang to be in an episode like, or like be centered in an episode like this. But then it's, I mean, the obvious counter to that is like, well, like we can only have him be the opposing force to whatever Arnold is doing in like the other ways that we've seen him so many times, right? Like we played football against him and it's like, well, we can't do that. Like, you know, a handful of times a season, that's going to be watching little old Arnold go up against big old 35-year-old linebacker Wolfgang is going to get old and tired after a while. You got to find new angles to like get Wolfgang involved in, and superstitions as this cosmic neutralizer is, I still felt a sort of weird energy from this episode, but I kind of like it. It's a weird big swing, and I like big swings, and I don't know. That was ultimately my takeaway.
Cody, what you had said kind of unlocked something for me, which is that I think we talked about it a little bit on episode A, but both of these episodes are sort of about punishing skepticism, but more so it's about like, it's about sort of like revealing the absence of the affected maturity that these characters think they have, right? And it occurred to me that that is a prevailing motif with most of the episodes where there are adults involved in Hey Arnold, and especially in the first Arnold's Halloween, right? The first Arnold's Halloween is supposed to be all about like, oh, kids, your silly Halloween, get out of the way. We need to watch our real Halloween stuff. And so the kids go like do that prank in order to prove that they can scare the adults too. Wolfgang is a weird stand-in for that, right? Because he is only 1 year older than them, but he operates similarly here, right? Where like, it turns out that Wolfgang's whole reason why he's bullying Arnold so much is because he himself is also superstitious. He's afraid of bad luck. And so he's kind of trying to prove to Arnold that bad luck exists by being the agent of bad luck himself. But Arnold turns that back around on him by scaring him with his own superstitions, right? So we end up in this place where it's sort of like, just be honest about, or don't be judgmental about people's sort of superstitions or their perceived immaturities, because lo and behold, you may have some yourself, sort of thing, right? Which is kind of an interesting through line throughout Hey Arnold, especially when you consider how much of the show is all about how the adults don't actually know more than the kids. And it's an interesting sort of double-edged sword with Arnold's other point that both of these episodes make, that the world is not actually as big and scary as you think it is, right? Like in Headless Cabbie, it turns out that like rationalism prevails up until the very end when maybe it doesn't, right? And then in this one, it turns out that Arnold was right, and the whole bad luck thing isn't really how it worked, but he only gets to sort of like acknowledge that he was right when he acknowledges that it was affecting me, or like I wasn't as sort of unaffected by it as I was pretending, just like Harold in the last episode. So I think that's a big part of why these episodes work so well in tandem. And it's a really interesting sort of like micro thesis that Arnold is playing with, but one that I think is really appropriate for the sort of tool set that Craig has always said Arnold is all about giving to kids, right? It's sort of like, you know, you're getting older and you're going to understand things more and more, but don't forget that like you're still a kid and it's okay to be a kid, and hey, maybe everybody else is too, that sort of thing. So I really appreciated that about this episode, though I agree with you that I think that like this is sort of it's an episode that you have to sort of home in on a little bit to understand its relationship with the rest of the series. But that's very rewarding to do. So it was cool.
Yeah, we wouldn't be here right now if it weren't rewarding. Makes you think. Weird Friday the 13th-esque difficulties notwithstanding. Are there any other thoughts that y'all had about this episode?
I really kind of want to build on what Harry was just saying there of kind of the tool set that it's giving you. And it kind of goes back to why, or at least potentially why, Madame Blanche is reused in this episode, where, because I know in the Love Potion episode, it's partially what happens in there, and what happens here is we give these things their own power. Like, we build that in our head, and that's kind of Madame Blanche's whole deal, where, it's why I love her character and that kind of character type so much, where they just kind of let people read into things what they're going to read into it, and allow them to give power and credence to what others may just write off. And that, I wish that this episode ended on more of like an uncertain hook, as the first one does, of just being like, who knows, maybe superstitions are real. I get why you wouldn't do that for especially something like this, because I don't think that's a great lesson to impart on children, but the part of me that loves scary stories and uncertainty and endings and kind of like darker, mysterious endings wishes that was how it ended, where it ended with like grandma, like, I don't even know what she would do. The end of grandma just doing a full on like jaguar call is good enough now that I think about it.
Yeah, I'm comfy enough with where that lands, because operating along the superstitions like authentic versus inauthentic spectrum is a tightrope to walk, because at the beginning of the episode she is full on embracing the superstition. She's like, give me all your black cats, give me all your ladders, bring forth all your broken mirrors, thine, you know, scaredy cats, and let's paint this town chaotic. And just like, I don't know, maybe fully embracing whether it's the superstitions or like an ideology, or just like being fearless with regards to those things, like being fearless so that you can overcome said superstitions, whether they're real or not. Maybe that's the takeaway lesson. Grandma like simultaneously like complicates and enhances that sort of wrestling that the episode is doing, but it's grandma and it's great. So like, what do you expect? And there are lots of cats, more stray animals, a season four motif. It makes you think, it doesn't, but it does.
I had a question that I wanted to pose to the three of you, because you've called into question kind of like Wolfgang's presence in this episode. And I'm wondering if it's potentially just because very easily I could imagine in this episode earlier, like if this happened in like a season one or two, you could see very easily Helga in the role of what Wolfgang is doing, or Harold, someone else who was kind of the bully character. But do you think that Wolfgang was used at this point because those other characters have been fleshed out so much that it's hard to put them into something like this, that it would almost be too mean-spirited of them?
That's a really good question. Maybe it's because of the ending, right? Because like I feel like punishing Helga or Harold the way that Wolfgang is punished at the end of this episode would have come across as kind of mean-spirited. And in fact, I'm thinking of like the April Fool's episode that we're going to get in season 5, I think, in which Helga is sort of punished by Arnold, and it's always kind of struck me wrong, though maybe I'll have a different opinion about it when we come back to it. But yeah, that's a really good point. And like, I'm not doing arm seat director here because I actually really like this episode, but like, it would have been fascinating to watch a Helga version of this, right? Where like Helga's superstitious and she wants to prove to Arnold that superstitions are real. That would have been a really fun, interesting moment. I think that you sort of speak to an interesting issue, which is that like, I don't know that Wolfgang has quite enough characterization to pull off having this much weight in his own episode, right? Though, I mean, I'm of two minds of that as well, so I want to hear everybody else's thoughts too, because I think it kind of works to make him a caricature, especially as a stand-in for somebody who's supposed to be older and supposed to quote-unquote know better. But yeah, it occurs to me that there are a few different characters that this would have been a more natural fit for. And I don't know if the whole idea that they're simply too well characterized at this point, or if the ending wouldn't have stuck right, or if there's something else going on there. But there is obviously a reason why they chose to use Wolfgang. And I'm not totally clear on what that is, but it's an interesting question.
I mean, the thing that I thought about while watching is if you can change, there are like two variables with regards to the trajectory of this episode. There's the point at which the dramatic irony is revealed, and it's, you know, it turns out, oh, this person is behind all of these things happening. That's one of them. And then the other one is like the severity of the pranks. Like if you were to soften what the pranks are so that it's, you know, Arnold and Gerald don't get covered in fish. Yeah, I got the timestamp. Don't worry. It's like, instead of, you know, blood and guts, it was like, you know, feathers and like glue or, so, you know, something more harmless, something that they don't have to like shower off of them.
Or something like, more clever, right? Like yeah. Part of the reason why these pranks hit so hard and feel so gross is because they're not even good, funny pranks. Like if Helga was doing this, they would have been funny. But this is just like Wolfgang just bought fish heads and then dumped them on Arnold. It's like, that's not funny. It's just mean.
Bought fish heads for $5.50.
$5.50. Yeah.
For a bucket of fish heads in this economy? Yeah. No way.
$1,999. Nowadays, that'd be like $500,000. Like the fish heads ain't cheap. Yeah. I mean, like if you soften what the pranks are, if you wait until like 60 seconds before credits for it to be revealed, like who's pulling the pranks, you can have Helga pulling the pranks. You can have Sid, Harold, Rhonda, Nadine. You can have whoever pulling the pranks. Like if it's just innocent, like, oh, you know, hey, this show is named after Arnold. He's a little too much on his high horse. He's all hoity-toity about these superstitions. Let's have a little fun with this. It can be pretty much anybody, but like because of the severity and because of like the, I don't know, the very aggressive blitzing of the dramatic irony reveal halfway through the episode, I guess, you know, Wolfgang made sense, and that's where they went, and it was fine. I would even say it was good.
Yeah, and Helga already got Arnold with the feathers on his ass in Girl Trouble, so I think that was last season. But yeah, I agree. I think it's just because Wolfgang and Edmund are more two-dimensional characters, and their characterization is just like that. It's kind of silly, stupid humor that gets them going, gets them all riled up. So the pranks are just like over the top, outrageous, and also helps Arnold and Gerald figure out like pretty quickly by the end of it. And especially with the purple gum prop, like, oh, it's them. I don't know. And let's have like an easy win here for once, maybe, instead of doing the usual morally righteous bent.
Just a quick note, shout outs to the purple gum. I love how whenever Arnold and Gerald are the focal point of an episode, they kind of end up being detectives again. Like they can't help themselves, right? Like even here, this is not a detective episode, but it's like they figured out who was pulling these pranks on them because they found Edmund's signature purple gum on the garlic necklaces that they had swapped out at the Madame Blanche's like anti-love. It's like, who are these kids? But I love it. You know, it's such a good callback. I love that Edmund's purple gum ends up becoming Chekhov's purple gum, right? Where it's like we see Wolfgang popping it throughout the episode. And then it's like, we know when we see the purple gum, we can put it together right before they do. It's such a great, it's like Antoinette Stella, so many flexes in this episode, right? Like the blighted joke even is such a great flex where Stinky calls them blighted at one point and they're like, no, we're not blighted. And then Gerald's like, what does blighted mean? And Arnold goes, well, look it up later. And then at the end of the episode, they say, let's go home and look up what blighted means. Just great stuff. So yeah, a lot going on in this episode.
Calling it Chekhov's purple gum is so spot on because there were so many moments where I was like, man, they're really giving a lot of screen time to this gum. Like, a lot of time is spent with Edmund trying to pull it off his face, and they do it twice. And when it finally comes back, I was like, oh, okay.
I love that Antoinette Stella needed, like, she needed to solve the mystery, right? It's like, I don't know, like, that's so above and beyond the Call of Duty. I feel like you could have just sort of had them be like, oh, yeah, it's probably Wolfgang. And we would have been fine with it. But I really appreciate going the extra mile.
So, yeah, the shot of the episode, it sounds like, is Edmund's gum. Honestly, whenever that gum wasn't on screen, I just couldn't help but ask myself, where's Edmund's gum? It gets the people going. Any other shout outs that people want to throw out for Friday the 13th on this today? Very much not a Friday the 13th. I'll keep it mysterious.
Shout out to Gerald, Wolfgang, Cody's, and my old Lucky Rabbit foot charms. Cody, you said yours was orange, which I think was Wolfgang's was also. Mine, I'm pretty sure, was purple. Also, I definitely made an association, which, I mean, it's a weird good luck charm, obviously, but I think I made it the association as a kid that rabbits then meant good luck, because I still, if I see a bunny hopping around, I consider it like a little moment of good luck for the day. But yeah, and then also shout out to Grandma on the roof in her cat suit at sunset. Very beautiful shot there. And then one last shout out to my future dissertation, Bad Luck, Religion, and Eternal Damnation, which will be available at my friend Madame Blanche's store, Love Potion.
I can't wait to pick up a copy. I just want to add to the Lucky Rabbit Foot chat. I had a green rabbit foot as well as a white rabbit foot because I lost said green rabbit foot and I needed to replace it so I was not cursed. And I already shouted him out, but a second shout out to Fishhead Guy. I love that character, and he nails that line delivery.
For the record, I too had a lucky rabbit's foot. It was just like rabbit colored because it was my grandpa made it for me, and he made it out of an actual rabbit that he had slayed. So was not lucky for that rabbit, but it was lucky for me, I guess.
I'd like to make an addendum to my shout-outs, so to add Harry and Dan's rabbit foots as well.
I don't know. I can't help but feel like Harry's just going for Lucky Rabbit Foot's stolen valor for his rabbit's color rabbit's foot.
I feel weird about lumping Harry in there because
I had a real rabbit's foot.
Yeah, I got mine out
fake
of a
dyed crap that you probably got out of a like a 25-cent little rotator gachapon thing.
Yeah, as
at
God
Spencer's.
Intended.
Yes.
Yeah, that's Spencer's at the local mall.
I got mine from a Cub Foods.
I think I got mine from like an arcade machine shed, perhaps.
Well,
the way
I got
that,
mine
the
from
way
my
that
grandpa
it was intended
for being a special little boy. So, deuces to all of you. I have the best rabbit's foot and the best rabbit's foot story.
Well,
good
for
night.
For as special of a little boy as Harry was and is, I think we can all agree the specialist little boy is our guest, Dan Nagin. Dan, thank you so much again for coming back to the show, for talking about another spooky pairing of episodes. If you could please tell us and remind the fine folks at home, where can people find you? Is there anything that you would like to plug? The floor is yours.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me back. I'm always thrilled to be here as the specialist little boy. I did like saying that. Jason, cut that out.
Jason, keep that in.
No, Jason, cut. Remove this whole bit. You can find me on Twitter at Dapper Dan Man. You can find me on Instagram at Dan Nagin. You can find me on Final Fantasy 14 at Hulk Smashworth. And you can also just find me on my podcast, Everything We Learned, a movie appreciation podcast where we talk about just movies and the lessons that you can learn from them. And depending on when this comes out, I think maybe our Clerks episode will be out. I don't know.
Ooh.
To tie in with somehow Clerks 3 is happening in like a week.
No. Insane. Oh, why? What?
I don't know. I don't know. No one asked for it, but it's happening. So time to revisit where it all started.
And yeah, you're not wrong. Listen, you're given the world what the industry has given you. Y'all should listen to Dan's podcast. And I'm sitting here in awe that Dan, it sounds like you nailed your socials for what might be the first time in this pod's history.
I didn't look it up impressed. At all. That is just how special of a little boy I am today.
Well, to Dan, the specialist little boy, and to all the special folks who are listening to this right now, thank you for listening to Stoop Kids, a Hey Arnold podcast. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Stoop Kids Pod, and that's kids with a Z. This episode was produced by super producer Jason Daphnis, and you can find him on Twitter at Nintendoofus. I've been Cody Narvison, and you can find me on Twitter at Cody_BH.
I've been Harry Mack, and you can find me on Twitter at Shiitake Harry.
Happy Friday the 13th, Halloween, Labor Day, fall, all of that and more. Thanks, Dan, for joining us as always. And I've been Emily Suey. You can find me on Instagram at Emily Suey.
And one special final shout out to our sponsor for this episode, who is, let me check my notes,
the Headless Cabbie. We'll be right back.